Hey folks, it's me, Ben Blacker, the creator and host of the Writers Panel. If you are looking for something fun to do on April 21st, wherever you are, please check out the new show that I'm producing called Retrospects. It's a live script read show. Back in the early days of television, the 1990s, writers hoping to break in would write episodes of existing shows. And these spec scripts were never meant to be produced, only to serve as samples for the aspiring writer. So what we're doing in Retrospects is taking those old specs and giving them live reads. On April 21st, we'll have our second show. We're featuring a West Wing episode written by Mark Guggenheim, the co-creator of Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. We're also doing a gender-swapped Big Bang Theory, written by Helen Chang, who is a writer on the Lord of the Rings TV show, as well as Hawaii Five-0, 13 Reasons Why. And we have an incredible cast. We've announced a bunch of them already, including a Superman, Brandon Routh, Katie Cassidy from Arrow, Olivia Scott Welch from Fear Street, Sherry Cola from Joyride, which is a great and hilarious movie, John Ross Bowie from The Big Bang Theory, and more, Ricardo Hurtado from School of Rock, Kieran Deal from Destroy All Neighbors, who's a great stand-up comic, my friend Rishi Hirway, who did the West Wing Weekly podcast. We got these terrific casts, even more are coming. That's on April 21st at 2 p.m., a reasonable hour for grown people. 2 to 4 p.m., you'll be home in time for dinner. You'll be in bed by 8:30. Attend live if you're in Los Angeles. Stream it wherever you are. We have tickets for both in-person and streaming, and they're cheap tickets because it's an afternoon show, and it's, you know, just a fun little show. Go to the Elysian Theater's website, elysiantheater.com. Check out their calendar and go to April 21st, Retrospects. I hope to see some of you folks there. These are really going to be fun shows. The scripts are great. The casts are amazing. The first one we did was such a good time. The second one will be even better because now I have less stage fright. Thanks, as always, for supporting the podcast, and please enjoy today's episode.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight. Whenever the time is right, it's the Writers Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh yeah!
Evan Wade is here. Evan, tell the folks where they have seen your name on their television screen and now their bookshelf.
Currently I'm writing on Family Guy, which I've been on. This is my fourth season on the show. Previously I worked for Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and the last season of that, and The President's Show, Three Busy Deborahs, a show called Inside Job, which is an animated show on Netflix, and Fairfax, which is an animated show on Amazon. And currently I am out promoting my new book, which is called Life Wants You Dead: A Calm, Rational, and Totally Legit Guide to Scaring Yourself Safe.
Like, looking at the stuff that you've done in television, it's no surprise that, like, this is a sharp, funny book, but it also feels very much of the moment. And also it feels in a way that those shows don't, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like your voice. Is that the case for this? Like, was this an opportunity to do something that sort of only you could write?
Yeah, I mean, that was always the conceit. Was, you know, I've learned a lot from working at these different places. You know, my first writing gig was at The Onion. And so, you know, I've done a lot of that kind of stuff. And I felt like just learned a lot from each place I went to. I was just picking up different tools and pieces. But it was always in service of somebody else's vision or concept. So this was the first time I've ever been able to really do my own project and just make it exactly what I wanted. And so it was very liberating to be able to do that. And honestly, like, I kept waiting for the publisher to kind of reel me back in and be like, oh, you can't do that, you can't do this. But they just never did. And they just let me make the book I wanted to make. So I felt like it was just a really liberating process. And it was just super fun. It's the most fun I've ever had writing something, I have to say.
So let's start at the beginning of it. Like when did this start to take shape? When were you like, this is the idea for the book, and this is the one that I think actually gets on the shelf?
Well, this, you know, it's no surprise that a book about fear would start around the pandemic. Things were, you know, I always thought of myself as a pretty, you know, mellow and level-headed person. And once the pandemic happened, I realized that I very much was not that person at all. I was like, oh, I'm learning something about myself. And it just felt like everybody around me, like the relationship with fear was completely changing very quickly. And you just saw people who, you know, were acting so much differently than they usually had been. And I was like, oh, this isn't just me. This is like a societal shift that's going on right now. So, you know, I wanted to start from an emotional core and thinking, okay, if we can talk about fear, that seems like a resonant thing for people right now. And so then I was just trying to figure out what is the right container for something like that, like be the format. And so I was just walking around Barnes & Noble and just looking at the different sections. And I came across a survival guide. And so I was flipping through it, and it was so interesting. Like the tone was so heightened. Now, like the writers of it were so, it was like, they were certain that there was going to be an apocalypse. Here's what you should do when it happens. It wasn't even a question of like, maybe things will be all right. It was like, they definitely won't. And here's what you got to do. So I was like, all right. You know, I thought that like, if you could marry that sort of conceit with a narrator character who really just didn't understand anything, was very fearful and stupid and wanted to give advice. Like that just seemed like a fertile ground for comedy. And once I started, you know, thinking about different ideas for it, it just was flowing so nicely. It was like I tapped a really rich vein. And so I felt like, okay, this feels like there's energy to it.
That's really fun. How did you sell it? Like, what did you have to put together? Did you have to write the whole thing? Did you put together a pitch? What did it look like?
Well, I did a book proposal, which is you have to write one sample chapter, and then you have to like write the table of contents of like, here's what each chapter would be. And here's the things that would be in it. You had to write just a thing about why you're the right person to write this book. Like, why is this book relevant now? You know, what you might do to try to sell it. And other books that have been successful that might, you know, have some connection to this type of a book. For instance, like The Daily Show's America book was the one that I cited because, you know, I like the combination of comedy, you know, text and visuals, and just like it was such an appealing package. It looked so nice. And it's the kind of thing that if you're flipping through it and you're not even reading it, you're still like enjoying it, just the visual like elements that are being at play. So, that's basically how we put that together.
Having been through that, you know, it's not wildly different from like creating a TV pitch or something, but it does use slightly different muscles. So how was that process for you in the writing of it, both in the proposal and the book itself?
Well, I would say, like, honestly, I'm more comfortable in like the prose humor space than TV, even though I've been in TV for, you know, about 6 years now. It's like before I ever was in TV, I was doing prose stuff for several years. You know, I as I mentioned, I started with The Onion, and then I worked with Clickhole and Mad Magazine and The New Yorker. So that's the world I was coming from. And then TV, you know, emerged, and I was like, this is amazing. But you know, it was actually quite satisfying to go back to doing prose humor stuff. So yeah, I felt really good about it.
Those muscles hadn't atrophied in the writer's room.
Well, they came back. But you know, it's like the thing is, because the structure was whatever I wanted it to be. So, you know, I could write these pieces and they could take weird swerves and go anywhere that I wanted them to do, you know, which is like sort of a different thing. You could start out as one piece and turn into something completely different by the end of it. And so I just, my only North Star was like, does this seem funny to me?
That was something I wanted to ask you about because I loved those left turns and I love like how weird and dark it gets in places. What's your comedy? Like, what's the stuff that you grew up on? What was influential for you? And sort of along with that, what's the stuff you're chasing when you're writing your own stuff?
I mean, I would say like in the prose humor world, probably like my biggest influence would be like Jack Handy, who I've always just thought was the best. And, you know, one of the things that I sort of took from him in terms of approaching this book was that like kind of pulling out topical references and trying to keep that to a real minimum because, you know, that kind of stuff can date your material later. Like I want it to be able to be read many years later and not feel like it's so stamped to one specific time period. You know, I was always like a big Onion guy. I loved Saturday Night Live. I probably watched like almost every episode of that. Calvin and Hobbes was always great. Simpsons, of course. Jackass was big. You know, I like things that are just cartoonish and silly, like big hype things. I mean, I'm sure you can see when you read it. It's like, you know, subtle humor is fine too, but I like just big and silly. Looney Tunes, you know, frying pan to the face is funny too.
It's funny too that like those are kind of the shows you've gotten opportunity to work on, is that kind of humor. I mean, I'm thinking of like specifically like Kimmy Schmidt feels so up your alley. It feels so right for you.
Yeah. I feel like I have been very lucky to like land on things that really like play to my strengths. Like those are the kind of things that I really enjoy. And, you know, just through good luck and just like maybe the material that I'm writing just sort of lends itself so much to that, that it feels like that's the natural place it would land. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Kimmy Schmidt is really just like a live action cartoon. And it's just, you know, I remember some bit where Titus is like looking down at his own feet and thinks that they're pieces of candy, like his toes are caramels, and he like falls down. He can't get back up because he's trying to grab them and stuff. It's just like that's funny to me. Like, I like when very like smart people are writing really dumb things. Perfect combination for me. That's what I enjoy.
And again, like this looks like it's where you've gotten your opportunities too. So coming off of, did you get into TV coming off of The Onion?
It was a longer road than that. I mean, first off, I mean, I used to be a teacher before I was doing any of this. I was an ESL teacher at elementary school. So, you know, I'd been doing that for, I don't know, about 7 years or so. And then and I just sort of decided I wanted to try to get into The Onion. I was like, all right, I'm going to see if I can do this. Because I just like The Onion so much. And okay, this, I mean, the idea of writing a script was like so far from anything I felt like I could do, but I was like, all right, I feel like I sort of understand like what the headline format is like. So, you know, I was just kind of reaching out to people around the orbit, just kind of sniffing around and writing a bunch of stuff. And luckily, you know, one of the editors came across my material and he gave me a tryout for, you know, a 4-week tryout for headlines. And yeah, I was able to pass that. And that was my first like foothold into comedy. But after that, I was trying to expand into other places because I was like, all right, you know, I just want to try as much stuff as I can. And I didn't really know anybody. So I moved to New York, and The Onion, they would have these parties every Friday, like Whiskey Friday, they called it. And so then just different people around the city that were comedy folks would come to the party. And so all of a sudden you're starting to meet, you know, some guys over at Colbert Report, and then there's somebody at Fallon, Mad Magazine. And so I got in touch with somebody, we were just having a drink, and they were the editorial cartoonist for the Mad Magazine, or for the New Yorker. I'm sorry, no, for the Onion. And then they also worked for Mad Magazine. And so I was like, hey, you know, could I ever pitch to those guys? And they're like, yeah, sure, you know. And so I started pitching some stuff to them, and they were into that. And
Did you have anything that landed at Mad?
Yeah. I've done some pieces over there. I mean, they don't really do much anymore, but yeah. I maybe done like, I don't know, 15 pieces or something. And then there was a guy at The Onion who's a friend of mine, this guy named River Clegg, who he was writing pieces for The New Yorker. And me and him started at The Onion around the same time. So we were just like workshopping our headlines together to try to tighten them up. And so it was a very organic slide to be like, hey, would you ever want to like write a New Yorker piece together? He's like, yeah, sure. And so we did that. And, you know, we started getting some stuff in. And so we just kept doing that. And then I would do some of my own pieces. And so, yeah, it was just sort of, you know, expanding in any way that would have me. And then I started to write those comedy packets for late night show, you know, where you have to do the submission projects.
Yeah, let's talk about those for a sec, because it's not something that comes up very often on the podcast. But like, yeah, when I was starting out, like we were sent those all the time too. And like, they can be fun, they can be a chore. And it feels like buying a lottery ticket, though. Like, if you don't know someone there, it feels so outside of possibility. So what shows were you filling out packets for? What kind of sketches were you writing, or were you writing monologue? What was your like expertise or focus?
I think the first one I did was The Daily Show. Submit to the Daily Show a couple times, Sam B, Colbert, you know, it was like in the late night sort of trenches like that. And, you know, I'd done a bunch of those and yeah, they take a lot of work to do them well enough to even come close to having a shot. You have to spend time on it. And, you know, sometimes they don't even email you back or, you know, you put a one sentence email, just, oh, thanks, but, you know, screw up.
So, did you feel at the time that you were up to the task though? Like, did you have the wherewithal to be like, all right, I've done enough comedy now. I've lived in the world enough. I can do this. Or like, what was your headspace at the time?
Well, I will say that, you know, just, you know, setting my sights on the Onion and having it actually happen did kind of put some wind in my sails. I'm like, all right, I'm not insane. Like, this feels like there might be something going on. And, you know, I was doing pretty well over there. And, you know, when I was doing the packets, like, I could feel myself getting, like, closer to the jobs. I didn't get it right off the bat. But, you know, I'd gotten to the second round of The Daily Show one time and I got the second round of Sam B. And I remember one time I had two interviews in 1 week. I was like, surely one of these is going to happen. Neither one did. I interviewed with Desus and Miro. So I was like sniffing at the door, you know, close. So I felt like, okay, if I just keep going and keep getting better, like, you know, eventually I felt like I would break through. But you know, it didn't always feel that way. You know, I remember one time I got, you know, when I was in the second round of The Daily Show, and then I got that email that saying I didn't get the job. And, you know, because in your mind, you're like spitting fantasies of like, you know, when I get over there, Jon Stewart and this and that. And then I happened to be at my mom's house and my mother loves taking pictures. And she's like, let's everybody take a picture. I'm like, do we have to do this right now? I just like got a gut punch 10 seconds ago. She still has that picture and I see it. And then my eyes is just like failure and sadness. And so.
So at what point did you start writing narrative scripts?
So my first job was at the President's Show. That was, you know, one of those packets that I did.
What was the format of that show? I don't really remember.
That was basically, you know, President Trump is hosting a late night show from the Oval Office. And like the first segment was usually a press conference. You know, it was basically a monologue, but like set up in the form of a press conference. And then they would have like a second act bit and then they would do an interview at the end. So yeah, I was doing that and, you know, I was just so happy there. I mean, it was like really, really a fun job. Everybody there was incredible. And I was definitely the low man on the totem pole because like, I don't know what I'm doing yet. I mean, I was learning and I think I was doing a pretty good job, but everybody else had been on like several shows very successfully. And I was like, this was my first thing. So I kind of went overboard with it. I was just like, I'm just going to work as hard as I possibly can. And plus it was just fun. So I was enjoying it. I was like, what else do I have to do? That's more fun than this. And I remember they had like a Twitter page that seemed a little like nobody was really doing much with it. It didn't seem like, so I kind of was like, all right, maybe that'll be a project. I'll like take that on and say, you know, I can write some jokes for this and try to like amp this up into something more than just, you know, tonight's the show, you know, be like a little more dynamic. And so, you know, I was just trying to find places to fit in and be helpful.
I mean, that's a great lesson for anyone who gets that first opportunity.
Yeah, just make yourself valuable. Like, you can do more than just what they're asking you to do. You know, like that's the bare minimum is like they say to do an assignment and you do it. But like if you can find a way to make their job easier or like add value to it that they're not asking for, like it will definitely raise your stock over there. Because even if they didn't want me to do that, they would still be like, okay, like this guy's paying attention. Like it would say something about your like ethic about what you're doing. And so what happened was that show was wrapping up its first season, which was its only season. And the Kimmy Schmidt people, they really were fans of the show. And so unbeknownst to me at the time, the executive producers of the respective shows were friendly with each other. And so I guess they were asking around at who was over there. And, you know, my name got passed over to them. And so I just got an email one day saying, you know, do you want to meet, you know, Tina Fey and Robert and those guys? And I was like, of course. I don't think there's any shot of this actually happening, but, you know, obviously I would take it. And, you know, miraculously, they did actually offer me the job. And so the President's Show ended on a Friday and then Kimmy Schmidt started that next Monday. It was like a seamless. So the next Monday, I'm like sitting in this room with the, you know, it was like a major level up situation. I was terrified.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. Dealing with that terror. And also, had you written a half hour script at this point?
No, that's why I was like, this isn't going to happen. Like, I think it was just what they do over there is, they like to bring in like somebody on the lower end where they feel like, if they can just feed us a ton of jokes. I think that was my, because I on present show, I was just cranking out so many jokes. Like that was what I was doing. So I think they were like, okay, somebody who can crack jokes, we can teach them the rest of this stuff. And since they have such a strong room already, they didn't feel like it was as much of a risk, I guess. So yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, I was like, I was really clammed up at the beginning because I was just like, I don't belong here. This is like somebody made a mistake. This is not right at all. But then, they were very nice though, and they were very encouraging. Be like, hey, we hired you because we like what you're doing, and just be cool and do your thing. Like, then once I could like mellow out, then I started to be able to do okay there. And I really grew a lot over the course of that season.
It must have been an enormous learning curve. Like you're basically learning everything in that. But in the room itself, what did you learn about being in a room?
Well, one thing that, which I did sort of get a sense of on present show, but even more was that, just keeping the sense of fun going. It's just like it was such a silly room and everybody was just like in a mood to play. And you have to like don't be the one that like ruins that energy, Just like you, it's supposed to be a fun job, and it can be if you can like get it out of your own way. And so I felt like just sort of keeping the vibe there, and because you're spending so much time together in the room. I mean, not very little of it is actually like sitting down to a keyboard and writing. It's a lot of it is just talking stuff through and being silly and just having a good time. So, that was like because I love doing that, but I can be kind of like a serious guy too. Like I'm sort of like. Sometimes when people find out I'm in comedy, they're like, "Really? I thought you were like an accountant or something." Yeah, vibe. But no, I. But then when you can open up and just be comfortable, everything very silly with it.
But there's something to getting comfortable. I mean, like some of these comedy rooms can be really tough because you do want to be comfortable enough to be a part of it, right? You want to offer up the jokes, but I know that it can be competitive. I know it can be, there's all these different kinds of voices pitching different kinds of jokes. So, like, when you get into a new room, how do you start to find your way?
Well, I think like it takes a little bit of time, but like the longer you're in there, you start to realize that like every joke you say isn't like a referendum on whether you should be there or not. That's how I felt like I was like sitting in an ejector seat or something where if I joke the bombs, they're gonna just like toss me right out of there. And when you realize it's like you're not auditioning for the job anymore, you have it, so just do it. And different rooms are different, but like the best rooms are the ones where nobody's like keeping score. It's not like a good energy for comedy. It's like, oh, I got one bullet on the board. It's like it's then it becomes your it's like you against the other people instead of us as a team together. And I've been lucky enough to be in rooms that are really not like that, which are just like rooms where everybody's trying to build something together. But I know that obviously they're not all like that, so.
But that's great. That's great to hear. Especially because like you've been in a bunch of rooms, and so that's a pretty good, batting average. Tell me also about like finding the voice of the show. As much as these shows have been in your comedy wheelhouse, there's a range within that, right? So like finding the right kinds of jokes for the show, the right character stuff for the show, and also as it pertains to your book, like how landing on the right voice for that book, which it sounds like came from some of the actual survival guides.
Sure. Well, I think you really just kind of have to pay attention to the show that you're on and really just watch it a bunch and read the scripts and you just sort of get a sense of the types of jokes that they would do and would not do. Like if you're going out for Fallon, you probably don't want to put a bunch of like hard blue jokes because that's just sort of not what he does. And yeah, I don't know. It's sort of an organic thing. You just kind of have to feel it out. I think, for me, I've switched gears a lot and I'm always doing like a couple of different things. So I think maybe that helps, like just doing Onion and New Yorker and then like writing a show or something at the same time, you constantly are switching and you start to feel whether it's sort of right or not. But you kind of it's like sort of like a Venn diagram where it's like your voice and then the show's voice, and you want to get like that overlap in the middle where it's like giving them a joke they wouldn't have already thought of, but it doesn't like grind the gears of the show either.
And then was it a similar process for the book? Like, you had these existing survival guides as sort of a jumping off point, but then you have to sort of nudge that voice into place.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's where like doing the proposal was really helpful, because that's sort of where I was figuring out, like, does this seem like the right tone or not? And yeah, it was just some tweaking going on, but it always felt sort of organic, honestly. I was like, it was sort of, the barometer was like just funny, heightened, and silly. It was really like the Holy Trinity. So if you could get those things. And what I realized is that, like, because it's speaking through the role of a character, you can kind of, it can be as heightened as you want. And like, you know, in the beginning I mentioned like this wife that he has, but then, you know, like, you don't have to mention him unless it adds a joke. You don't have to have it. You know, it's like in one joke he has kids and now he doesn't. And it's just like, it just can go wherever you want it to, because what I realized is when you have a super unreliable narrator, it's just like, they're like, you don't even know what the truth is, because, you know, the person telling you is so scrambled.
What were the conversations like with the editor once it got to that stage?
Well, we did it in kind of an interesting way. I don't know if everybody does it this way, but like, basically I gave them one chapter at a time. And then when they were bringing back notes, I would be working on the next chapter as opposed to the entire thing. And I personally think that it definitely worked for the better, because, you know, you can find out what wasn't working and what wasn't working until, like, before you had the entire thing. So then you'd be like, oh, this type of thing doesn't work quite as well, so maybe we just don't add this going forward. But also, you know, I worked really closely with my illustrator, Paul Searing. You know, this wasn't like just a hired hand type of thing. Like, we were on it together the entire time. So it was a real partnership. And so you had an extra person whose, you know, sensibility really trusted to be like, I'm not that into this, or like, this is great. And, you know, and also with the illustrations, she would sort of be like, you know, it wouldn't just be like, I say to do this thing and then she does it. It's like, I don't think this is the best way to do it. Why don't we try this? And why don't we try that? And like, so we would meet like pretty much every week to talk, and she would bring the new batch of illustrations and we would sort of discuss them. And it just kept my energy up because it was so fun. I look forward to every meeting. It was like so silly. And we were just talking about all this nonsense and laughing. And then it would be like, it would make me excited to like send her the next batch of material, knowing what she could do with it. And then also it made me more ambitious about the types of things I could do, because I realized she could execute anything I could think of.
I love that. I mean, that's the best kind of collaboration. Like, you're feeding off each other. You're getting each other excited about it. How did you two get hooked up?
Well, when I was doing the proposal, I realized that I wanted to add a bunch of illustrations to the proposal, because I didn't want to just like describe what they would be. Like, it's more fun to see them. I felt like it would sort of immerse the people reading it more in the world of the book. They would understand the tone a lot more when you're sort of in it. So I reached out to a friend of mine who was the editor-in-chief of Clickhole at the time, and just asking around and saying, oh, is there anybody who... Because I felt like people that were in that world would be able to really execute a lot of weird ideas. Also, like, make sure they understand what's funny about it. Because sometimes you can get an illustrator who would be really talented, but they just completely miss the joke. And that doesn't work either. And they just recommended her to me, and I was looking over her stuff and I was like, oh, she seems great. And so we worked together on the proposal, and that's how we sort of fine tuned our working relationship. And then once we took it to the publisher, they just liked what she was doing so much. They were like, can we just bring her instead of trying to find somebody else? Like, she's right there. And I was like, this is perfect.
That's awesome. What a great experience. The book is Life Once You Dead. Folks should check it out. Before we wrap up, I do want to ask about, so you're currently on Family Guy, is that right?
Yeah, this is my fourth season on the show.
A fourth season, you said that, that's right. So, and this is, you know, you're coming into a 25 season show or whatever it is. Having been somewhat in that situation before, my partner and I joined a seventh season show. And there was a lot of like, yep, we've heard that pitch before. Yep, we've done that. So I want to ask about just navigating that circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing to do except just try to write more ideas and try to get better ideas and, you know, paying attention to things that are going on. And like in pop culture, sometimes that can kick off an idea, just some societal shift that wasn't there several years ago. So there wouldn't have pitched something like that. Could be helpful. And yeah, it's just like a tonnage issue. Just write more ideas and also kind of Googling around to see, you know, if you come up with an idea, just check to see if you've done something like that. And then if they have, maybe there's a way to tweak it enough that it sort of doesn't feel like it's hitting that same beat. Or, but it is a problem. I mean, that's the number one reason things get shot down is because, like, yeah, we did that.
Again, it's like very much in your wheelhouse, comedy-wise, it seems. Do you feel like you've gotten to do stuff that is representative of you and your perspective and your comedy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they really give you a lot of latitude when you're writing a script. It's just like if it's funny, and it's making us all laugh, like it usually gets through. And so when you're writing a script, yeah, you get a lot of chances to add your own sort of spice into it. Because I see episodes from different people, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a joke that like it's sort of from their perspective. And that's another, you know, that like that comedy overlap that I was mentioning. It's like you have your material, like your sensibility and the shows, and you can put those together and makes like a really interesting thing. And that's what's so cool about having so many writers on the show. It has a lot of different voices in this too.
That's good to hear. I'm glad to hear it. It sounds like a good experience. And you have time to do this other stuff, which is really cool.
No, it's just like really great. Like the combination of being able to do my own thing and then being a part of this other thing that's this great show that really makes me laugh a lot. It's, yeah, I'm very happy with where things have landed. I mean, I didn't know if I'd be able to do any of this. So, you know, this all feels like great for me.
We'll wrap up as we always do by asking what you are watching on television these days. What is getting you excited or inspired?
Well, I've been watching the show called The Regime, which I really like. It's an HBO show by Will Tracy. And, you know, I first was curious about it because he used to be the editor in chief of The Onion when I first started. Like he was, you know, I remember when I was doing my tryout, he was like one of the guys looking over the material. And so it's just very exciting whenever you see some Onion person who's really popping in some cool way. And so, you know, I just checked out the pilot and I was like, this, I really like this. I mean, I just thought it was great. So I've been enjoying that. Of course, the last season of Curb, I'm enjoying that a lot. That's like one of the best shows ever. I'm sad it's going away, but it's still so funny though. It's just like, it's, I don't know. He's just like on a Mount Rushmore of comedy writers to me. I mean, it really gets no better than that. I have been watching The Simpsons and the new episodes have been really, really funny. Like they've, the last couple of years, it's been this renaissance and they're just like really hitting it off with some great stuff. So it's one of those shows that's been around so long, you sort of forget about it a little bit, but you pop back in, you're like, still great.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that. I've had like a Simpsons itch lately. And I was like, I wonder if the new episodes are good. I'll have to check them out.
Scratch that because it's good.
That's really fun. Evan, thanks so much for chatting.
Yeah. Thank you, man. This is great. I appreciate it.